Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast. Today's episode features Sarah Dale, co-founder and partner at OG Cannabis Cafe, located in West Hollywood, California. This episode was recorded in person at the OG Cannabis Cafe on February 26th, 2020. First off, thank you again for being willing to sit down with me this morning and actually talk through here with Sarah Dale, co-founder and partner here at OG Cannabis Cafe in Southern California. Thank you again.
Thank you for coming in and thank you guys for, you know, supporting the entire cannabis industry.
Oh, of course. Well, it's not us. Obviously, it's you guys that are the ones that are the forefront, being the first social use lounge that opened up here in West Hollywood, which is the first social use lounge in Los Angeles County, which is the largest adult use market in the world. Kind of walk us through the process of what made you guys want to originally open the cafe and kind of what brought you to the cannabis industry in the first place.
Well, as far as social consumption and the cafe, you know, we're here because of the city of West Hollywood. The way that the state of California set up their sort of cannabis regulations is really different than most of the states are doing it. Mm-hmm. California made a statewide law and then gave so much freedom to each municipality. And in Los Angeles County, there's alone, there's 80 different single municipalities just in our county. So the way the state of California set it up was you cannot be looser than the state law, but you can regulate from within your city and you can opt out entirely. That's why there's the issues of a lot of municipalities have not opted in even to recreational cannabis. So within that, we knew that the city of West Hollywood is, you know, the most progressive place on planet Earth. It is 1.9 square miles of just all the good things. You know, we say West Hollywood exports culture. Most places, you know, import it. And when we knew they were starting to consider what they were going to do as far as their recreational cannabis ordinance, we knew that they would consider consumption. So we started a year before, like, the ordinance even came out, meeting with the city, talking about the importance of consumption, you know, as a public safety issue, as an access issue. You can't have something be legal, mm-hmm. you know, recreational cannabis, sure. and have nowhere to do it. It just doesn't make sense, right? Because you can't smoke it in the park, you can't smoke it in your hotel room, yeah. and for a lot of people, you can't smoke it at your residence if you don't own it. And, you know, West Hollywood was incredibly brave. In the late 80s and early 90s, San Francisco and West Hollywood answered the call. They were absolutely the two cities that were most devastated by the AIDS crisis. You know, they watched a generation of their men just suffer. And at that point, the patients, cannabis was palliative. They could not cure it. There were no therapies happening at that point. And West Hollywood was the first city to say, we will allow them. They had the first medical dispensary. Mm-hmm. And it was literally for palliative, to ease the suffering. So, you know, it made sense that West Hollywood would also be the first to allow consumption, because a lot of older people live in, if you rent an apartment, and your landlord says you cannot consume here because it's federally illegal, you can't consume there. It's your medicine. It's your chosen method of ingestion of your medicine.
Right.
So it really makes sense that it's an access issue. Like, basically, you can only truly legally smoke if you own your home. So then that becomes like, it's like a luxury. And we really believe that cannabis and access to cannabis should not be a luxury.
Well, and when you're going through the process, you know, being the first one to open up, obviously a lot of compliance now with the BCC from the 215 days. You know, can you kind of talk about the process that you guys went through when you were originally applying for that first license, and you know, how did you decide on the aesthetics, the location? Like, how did that all come together for you?
Well, we have a really incredible and truly diverse team of our founders and partners. Mm-hmm. We all sort of come from different areas, and we all sort of have our wheelhouse that we, you know, is our purview. We, as far as the process, the application process was the city of West Hollywood writing this ordinance, mm-hmm. and then they had what is now sort of standard, which is a competitive weighted application process. Mm-hmm. In fact, the process that the city put out is literally basically mimicked now by, you know, Pasadena basically took it, tweaked it, you know what I mean? And the idea was to give everyone a fair shot at licensing. The city did not require you to have real estate going in, which was great because that opened it up to people who didn't have those resources. They really went on sort of concept, knowledge, connection to the city of West Hollywood, and, you know, and your sort of cannabis experience, and if you have, you know, been in regulated industries before. So our, you know, our team really answered each one of those points on the application. And so we had Courtney and Sean, who actually were you know, the co-founders or creators, I should say, of the brand Lowell, right? Like all that branding, all that packaging, all that good vibe, that was Courtney and Sean. You know, we, our chef, our executive chef and partner, Andrea Drummer, phenomenal woman, one of the absolute leaders in infused food and microdosing and cooking with cannabis in a way that complements the dishes. We can't serve infused food because that's just not going to happen on a state level right now. But having her head our kitchen with an eye towards that one day has been remarkable. I come from a community organizing background, and so for me, this really was about making sure that we were including our community and telling this larger story of cannabis and access, and making sure that we work not only with the city but with our surrounding communities and hopefully get the word out to other communities that, like, this is okay, guys. This is actually good.
Well, you guys are creating kind of the not just the model from a regulatory standpoint, but a model in terms of what it takes as the bar to succeed in this portion of the industry. You know, we're sitting here right now inside the cafe. You have a beautiful wooden aesthetic around here, lots of plants, kind of giving off the vibe of almost an earthy, northwestern-y vibe. You know, you guys really are creating the standard. It's no longer the 215 days of those drab kind of mechanical.
No, it used to just be like a weird smoke hole.
Yeah.
And like that's not what we're about, like, at all. And I have to say that, you know, they're public record, you know, now, and you can look at all the winning applications for West Hollywood. So there were 7 other licenses awarded. Mm-hmm. We're the only ones who've, like, just sort of figured out how to, like, make it happen. And, you know, we're still figuring it out every day. We're getting better. But it's been a lot of regulation and a lot of loopholes. Like, how do we do this when it says, you know? But if I'm very proud, if you look at our application, the visuals on our application are so incredibly close to what we have produced. We really are fulfilling everything that we said we would do to the city. And that makes me incredibly, incredibly proud. And again, we didn't apply with this space. We kind of applied with a little bit of an imaginary space. But we were really fortunate. I don't think that we would be up and running and open if we hadn't found this particular location.
And the location's perfect. You guys are right near Hollywood Boulevard, right off the La Brea Corridor.
Across the street, it's Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like, we're literally less than 1,000 feet from Los Angeles. So we're really at the very beginning of West Hollywood, which is wonderful, you know. There's so many great nooks and crannies in the 1.9 square miles that is West Hollywood, but we were absolutely thrilled with this location. It gave us the ability to do food. It really did.
And you guys are, as far as I know, the only ones currently doing food in the world in social use consumption. Nobody in Amsterdam is currently doing food with cannabis, as far as I know. Nobody in the Bay Area is currently doing food with cannabis.
No.
You guys are the only ones currently doing it. What was the idea that you wanted to have food with cannabis?
Because this is fellowship. This is fellowship. And you've been here when it's busy, yes?
Yes.
What is it? It's fellowship. I mean, I walk in here and there's literally, it's the most diverse room in Los Angeles. Every age, every background, you know, and it's fellowship. Mm. And so that doesn't happen if you're at little tables just smoking or ingesting. You know, food is how we all community. It's how we all commune, right?
Right.
Like, it's sitting around those tables and having those conversations. And it's social. I mean, the bar area is great because people, like, you would go into, like, a regular bar and sit down and you talk to the person next to you. Mm-hmm. So for us, this really, the idea of fellowship is a lot easier when you have this truly open and social and connective atmosphere. That's really what we're trying to produce. It's a really open space. There's no, like, VIP part. There's no velvet ropes. Like, we really, it's really important to us that people are welcome here.
Well, and I was going to say, you guys just hosted an event recently that was a comedy event. You guys mentioned that you wanted to do more events in the future to kind of bring the culture of the community into Lowell, or I'm sorry, the OG Cannabis Cafe. Oh, I forgot. I should probably actually bring that point up. You guys did do a rebrand from Lowell to OG Cannabis Cafe.
We did.
Can you kind of talk about what the reasoning was behind the separation and what the brand now is and what the brand is going to be looking into the future?
So, just first off, so that people understand, like, the step-by-step kind of history of it, like, we did not apply or win this license as Lowell Cafe. We applied, won this license, and the vision was actually called Flore, Cafe Flore.
Nice.
And the very first press, if you go back and look, it's like when they announced, like, the winners, there was a couple little things about us, and it was Flore. The concept, the vibe, the commitment to community, all of that came from us. It didn't come from Lowell. We had two of our partners that were, you know, really, to me, the best parts of Lowell, but I had never dealt with Lowell on a corporate level, any of it. Like, they were my only connection, or our only connection. We knew that because we're not, like, backed by any, like, venture capital, we're just a group of people trying to, like, make a vision happen. So we knew that if we were, you know, lucky enough to win a license, that we would need to bring on some kind of partners to, you know, financially get us open. At the time, it seemed like this sort of natural fit to partner with Lowell.
Right.
To help us kind of get open. And it was like, name it Lowell, fine. It sort of was like we didn't maybe think it all the way through. It was all very exciting. But we just quickly realized that this was not the right partnership.
Right.
And I mean, thankfully, really, you know, really quickly. We didn't want to be like a flagship post for, like, a brand. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because what we celebrate here is all of cannabis culture, all of these sort of brands, all these emerging things that are happening. Like, it didn't feel like us to be just a corporate extension, because we're not corporate.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're not Lowell. We're not, you know, we were sort of like an investment for them.
Right, right.
But not, so we had nothing to do with their corporate culture or their corporate behavior.
So was the
or their corporate behavior.
Yeah. I was gonna ask about kind of their corporate behavior. Was the decision to separate from Lowell more of that branding standpoint, or was it more along the lines of the SLO operation that they got? You kind of the San Luis Obispo, the grow facility that they got caught with.
Oh, do you want to know something about that?
Sure.
So That the Department of Agriculture investigation, right?
Right.
That had been ongoing, right? It wasn't like the day that it hit the press. Like, so it's my understanding that Lowell knew about that investigation and never told us. Mm. So that's not great.
No.
So I think that there was just a lack of transparency going on, because I think we would have immediately made different decisions, obviously. So there was just a lot of stuff going on for Lowell that we were just not, we had no idea. Well, so that's a, you know.
And clearly you guys have since recovered from the split in partnership.
Well, I think what's happening is, like, we are not obstructed from our vision. And I think that's really what it's about for me. Like, you know, I think, you know, however the marketplace for flower and brands. Like, I think that all kind of remains to be seen, but I know what I have control over and what we as partners have control over. And the bottom line was we started to lose that control, and it started to not really be the place that we envisioned, which was open and community and all of these sort of great things. And we were really losing that under their leadership. And I think you can tell the vibe difference. Like, it's really different from the first, like, 2 months.
Oh, yeah. Right? You guys are doing much, much better now. I mean, you guys have also streamlined operations. You no longer have a separate bud tender from waiter. It's kind of a singular operation.
No, we just get to be nimble now because it's back to us. Mm-hmm. And we're scrappy and we're problem solvers. And so it was a very quick course correction. So that makes me, you know, really happy. And again, it feels like the way it sort of always should have been, which is those of us who really founded it, like, running it and doing it and addressing the issues ourselves without a kind of a corporate interest that maybe didn't share our interests.
Well, now that you guys have the full separation, you guys are running on full cylinders. Tell us a little bit about the onboarding process for the brands. How do you guys decide which brands that you want to have on your menus, and kind of tell us a little bit about that.
So we have this amazing product procurement director, Red, and he's just knows his stuff, but he's also really creative and willing to really take a chance on new brands. We have a 10-page cannabis menu, 10 yep. pages. So one of the most important things is making sure we have things that are good for beginners. Like, the first thing that happens when you sit down is your flower host really talks to you. Like, you know, what's your relationship with cannabis? Like, how often do you smoke? Like, and if someone's like, oh, I smoke, and they're like, oh, okay, when's the last time? My sister's wedding last year. You're like, okay. So here's some lower dosage. We really want to take care of people and make sure that, like, they're getting the right products for them. Mm-hmm. So Red has done this phenomenal job of, like, you know, it's like a sommelier. It's like he's really able to find and source just amazing product.
Let's talk about the overall community here in West Hollywood and the overall cannabis scene. We now have you guys currently open. We have the Artist Tree opening their social use consumption lounge at the end of the year. We have several other applicants looking to open up in the 2021 market. What does the overall culture of Southern California look like moving forward now that this is changing?
Well, I want to say, first of all, I'm actually really excited for the other consumption lounges to come online. We've been out here on the ocean, like, by ourselves, like, building the boat, like, you know what I mean? And so I'm excited to see their visions, like, come to life, because right. I think everyone that was awarded a license has a really different articulation of what they want their dream consumption space to be. And so I know what ours is, and I get ours, and I really can't wait to see what these different visions are in practice, right? So I think that's gonna be exciting. As far as, like, you know, there are some smaller municipalities that are allowing consumption on some level. Like, there's Palm Springs, I think that slowly but surely, consumption has to be a part of the conversation. And again, like most things, it's like what we do here in California, what they do here in West Hollywood. It takes 3 to 5 years for the rest of California and then another 10 for the rest of America. So I think that we're at the beginning of what I hope is something that rolls out across the country, because it has to be part of the conversation. And I think cannabis in general, right, and legalization, West Coast. We own it. It's where we grow it. It's always been a part of our culture, from the 60s and before, the yep. 40s, the 30s, you know, Hollywood, California, Oregon, Washington. We've always been very progressive states. So I think that it took a while with cannabis, and there are times when we thought we were gonna, like, flip the switch. But basically what it takes is, like, any sort of social movement, I think, which is like positive ubiquity. Okay. Right? Where you can say, you know, someone in Alabama where it's not even legal yet, right? I went to my cousin's wedding, I met the nicest guy, and you know what? He used that cannabis when he had cancer. Only thing that helped him. you know, or sweet Aunt Martha, the only thing that helps her debilitating arthritis is that weed cream. You know, these are the kinds of things that break down those barriers, right? And now everyone has that story that is personal to them of how cannabis has helped either them personally or someone they love.
100%.
And that's the positive ubiquity, right? Mm-hmm. So our job is to show the world and America and the rest of California that, look, come on in. It's a beautiful patio. Someone's eating a taco. It's a delicious taco. They're smoking a doob. The sky did not fall.
Nope.
God did not smite me. Like, everyone's behaving. It's actually really lovely. So I think that the more we can show that this is normal and that this is what people have been doing in their homes forever, that's what I'm looking forward to, is really rolling this out in way, showing other municipalities that this is a really positive thing on so many levels.
Well, and considering how you guys are doing it, not just you, but all the other consumption lounges with their renderings and how upscale and how inviting the experiences are going to be, do you see more municipalities coming on board now with social use as a result of what you guys are accomplishing here in West Hollywood?
Absolutely. We've had, you know, city planners and city managers come through this cafe, and they are brought here by our lovely, you know, city leaders of West Hollywood. West Hollywood are really the ambassadors for this, and they're bringing their counterparts from different cities and saying, let me show you. And, you know, one of our other founding members and partners, Renee, has spent her life as an activist and real, you know, just political woman. She was, you know, part of like the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. She's very, very, very active about knowing that that's a huge piece of this puzzle, is being able to communicate politically and with the decision makers, right? And being able to communicate that at the end of the day, this is a public safety issue. Like, this is actually safe and equitable access, and that needs to be part of the conversation. And we you know, we're a business, so we need to make money.
Sure.
But we really want to make sure that for our business model, that as many people as possible can experience it. We really try not to be out of reach for people who want to experience this.
Well, and for your partners, you have multiple co-founders of the OG Cannabis Cafe. How did you originally find the partners that you currently have? Like, what was the relationship and story behind that? It's always fascinating hearing how people team up.
No, it's super wild, but it's also really, really, really organic. So Renee and I worked together and had been working, doing like community programs for dispensaries, right? Going in, working with dispensaries and saying, this is how you can be a good community partner here in Hollywood or here downtown, like really trying to bring the industry on that level, bring them to the community, bring them into the light, stuff like that. And Renee had worked just for years with the city of West Hollywood, had done activism, had run campaigns here, helped with the ban on fur. I mean, she just really. And so, again, when we knew, like, hey, West Hollywood is going to probably be amenable to this consumption idea, we started to think about people that we could partner with to have a go at it, right? And I knew Sean, who really created the Lowell brand and all of that. I knew him years ago in another lifetime. And I was talking about the sort of cannabis work that I've been doing, and our mutual friend said, you should call Sean. You know, he like founded one of like the biggest, you know, cannabis brands. And I hadn't talked to him in probably 10 years. And I just called him up and I was like, West Hollywood, social consumption. And he was like, come on over. And I was like, wow, this is so crazy. This is amazing. You know, so that was the nucleus. And then Courtney, you know, was his, you know, kind of right hand doing all the design. She was head of design and like product development. And then Andrea Drummer, our fantastic chef, was someone that was in Sean's community, and we just slowly, like, we basically built our dream team, and it was great. And we all, I think, really work well together because we all want the same thing, Right. So even if we have different ideas about how to get it, it's all coming really from the same space. And we sort of let each other do what we're good at, but we also really listen to everyone else's ideas.
Well, I mean, clearly it shines through. What do you see as the progression of the cafe concept here? Do you see this as your flagship and that you're going to possibly launch this concept in other areas? Are you making your stand here in California and this is your end all? What's the future of you guys?
I mean, the future is, you know, this is obviously our flagship, but of course we want to have original cannabis cafes, you know, all over the place. But I think what's important to us is understanding that what an original cannabis cafe in West Hollywood looks like might be different, because what you need to do is respect each community that you are, you know, honored enough to serve. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that you would just kind of bump, 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 bottom, like stamp them out is, again, I think we'll always have our plants and our openness and our vibe and our philosophy of fellowship. But I think you really have to dig in and work with the locals, the local leaders and the local constituents to understand what they want and what they need. So I think there'll always be a local twist on anything we do, because I think we really appreciate the uniqueness of each municipality that would be sort of, you know, brave enough to get on board.
Is there anything that any municipality or state or county that necessarily excites you guys most for a possible future expansion?
I mean, right now we're just kind of focusing on making this location like the best thing it can be. And when and if other municipalities start, you know, that process, we will definitely, I think, be there to, you know, hopefully guide them through how it can actually work. Mm-hmm. I think the best way to see it is to come and actually see it. But no, I don't think we've got like our next favorite location. I think it's about the next place that's gonna be brave enough and I think smart enough to add this to their overall, cannabis regulations.
Well, California has been tumultuous, to say the least, in terms of regulation from the 215 days. We have a large problem with the licensees not being given their annuals fast enough, things like that. We have problems now with the excise tax being raised. We have the three entities streamlining eventually. What's happening here in California and what can we expect?
I mean, I don't know. You know, what's happening here in LA? I mean, we're not in LA, people. We're in West Hollywood. That's right. Why we get to do this. So I think, you know, it's wild. And then if you look at these other, you know, Illinois just, you know, did their licensing process for retail, right? Missouri just did medical. And I don't think really anyone's doing it right now. And so on one hand, I wish people would just kind of, I want it to open up. I want these markets to open up. I want people to have access. But I also wish that people would kind of slow it down, because we're seeing so many fumbles within that regulation. And for me too, you know, working with other entities, and I work and advise on applications for people.
Nice.
I help people write and build their applications. And I think that one of the things that I'm not thrilled with is the articulation of social equity programs. I think that they are I think there's very few good ones. I think that most of them are, you know, sort of a form of lip service at best, and, you know, just completely ineffective at worst, you know, almost meaningless, you know? And so I think that there is a great opportunity for regulators to find ways to build out truly impactful social equity programs. I just don't think many states or municipalities are doing it.
Well, in your neighbor to the east, Los Angeles County, having the DCR have to go through the round again due to the application process and the impropriety, who do you see as a good, say, model for social equity, and who do you see as maybe fumbling the ball the most?
Well, I think that, and again, I don't know everything, you know, but I will say our neighbor to the south, again, a smaller municipality. I think small, you get a lot more control, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you can almost regulate good behavior. Like, that's pretty awesome. So Long Beach. I think Long Beach has done a great job because what they did is they really defined what their social equity looked like, right? And they didn't do it with a crazy benchmark, right? Los Angeles's benchmark for what is a social equity person is pretty high, right? And I think that really doesn't... So disproportionately affected negatively by the war on drugs, right? That's the umbrella that we're talking about, right?
Right.
But when you talk about an impact to a community, that's really can be generational, right? So like someone's like, you know, father or mother or, you know, or provider for their family that had a conviction that was then put incarcerated for an obscene amount of time, like that can affect an entire generation because there's a parent gone, there's money that's not coming in, there's not opportunities for those kids, right, it's a long story, and that can affect the generation after that. And so I think the way Long Beach did it was it set up tracks, right, of where there was high incarceration, high poverty, urban core, right? And if you had lived in those tracks at any point over like 15 or 20 years, you qualified because it affected your life then as a child. It's not saying like, where do you live now, right? They really, I think they thought about it and they gave the dispensaries there a benchmark they could reach.
Which is important.
Yeah. So the benchmark there is the dispensaries are tasked with having 40% of their payroll hours go to qualified social equity employees. And the city helps you vet them. The city does job fairs. You know, the dispensaries are being really creative. They're designing, you know, mentoring programs. And all of a sudden, you know, having an owner that's a social equity owner, who does that help? It helps like one person, right? And they're usually a straw man, right? Where it's like, here's your...
A face, your, yeah.
Yes, right? Bye-bye. But literally giving good paying jobs, career advancement opportunities to this generation, that has impact. It's like what the unions did for families. You can really lift people out of poverty by giving them good paying jobs with security and a chance for advancement.
100%. I mean, you have a situation here where a lot of people are impacted. Not everybody is going to get in. Why not give it to more people than just one person, kind of thing?
Define it. Define it in a way that there is, you know, there's accountability from the owners,
sure,
from ownership, to consistently do this, right? But make it attainable. That's what I think.
Do you think California is going to eventually get this right?
Well, I mean, again, California has given so much leeway to each municipality. And you get to find out, when the applications are released, you get to find out what's important to that municipality.
Right.
So for some, like how they weight that criteria. Like, wow, there's a lot of points on design. So clearly how we look matters to them, right? Other places, it can be social equity or, you know, diversity initiatives and plans. For other municipalities, it can be, you know, how you're, you know, treating your workers or whatever it is. But you can really see a city's priorities in how they weight out that application.
Well, the newest regulation from the BCC, the QR code aspect, trying to help consumers kind of understand who are legal retailers and who aren't legal retailers. Here in Los Angeles, that's a little bit more prevalent of a problem than it is anywhere else in California. Do you see that as a positive step forward, or do you see it as kind of like a moot point because most consumers maybe not won't use it? What do you see as a fix for this?
I mean, enforcement? I mean, the bottom line is like enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's great. You put a thing up. If you're going to an illegal dispensary, you're not looking to scan something, right? You're just not.
Right.
You don't even know. It's like one more sign to read. It's one more sign to read. 99% of the people are not going to read it or not even know about it or know what it is. They're going to assume it's like I'm signing up for their social media. Like the bottom line is enforcement, enforcement, enforcement.
Yeah.
And I get it. It takes time, money, and resources to do that. But it's, again, show me what your priorities are. I think San Diego's done a pretty great job of enforcement.
Yeah.
Like, if they shut a place down, they literally fine them out of existence. They shut their power off. Like, you know, there are municipalities that are taking enforcement of illegal dispensaries seriously. And I know that in Los Angeles, it's such a behemoth that it's just hard to control. I do think that they're trying to make positive steps forward, but right now, you know, people call dispensaries and say, like, do you charge taxes? Like, they want to go to illegal dispensaries because the taxation, and it's just so prohibitive.
Right.
That if someone's going to literally pay 50% less, they don't care.
Do you see a possible reduction in taxes coming through? I know we saw Berkeley City Council do their 50% reduction.
Yes, I hope so. I really, really hope so. Because I think what, again, people are realizing is, what is equitable access? If it's only affordable, you know, cannabis is not a luxury, people. It should not be a luxury. Mm. It 100%. Should be something that is within everyone's lifestyle who chooses it, period. And, you know, the higher and higher it gets, it's a luxury good, and that's certainly not how we view it. That's certainly not how the activists have viewed it, and it's certainly not what healing and building a community is about. It's not about exclusivity. It's not about luxury.
Well, so, I mean, I was going to say, looking to maybe some place which possibly needs it almost as much, if not more, than Los Angeles is Las Vegas, Nevada, with their tourism market. I mean, you can't smoke it in the hotels. Most people who are in that city aren't residents of the city.
I know.
You know, we now have their block for, I believe, another year still on the social applications for social consumption. Like, what does that market look like to you guys? And are you guys kind of keeping an eye on what's going on over there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're keeping an eye on everything, for sure. And I think that would be a huge, huge, huge market. But remember, it wasn't that long ago. Like, Las Vegas had some of, like, the most hardcore anti-cannabis laws anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Sin City, but, like, you get caught smoking a doob, like, it's a problem. It was, like, not, you know. So I think it's actually amazing how far they've come in such a short amount of time, if you really think about it, you know.
It's true.
And I think that it's, like, you know, here in Los Angeles, we have the entertainment industry. It dictates a lot. You know, it took me 20 extra minutes to get here because there was a film shoot. They're shutting down the street, right? Because it's industry town. And in Las Vegas, the industry is gaming. And I think that those are really powerful interests, and they're trying to figure out how this makes sense for them and how they fit into it. And, you know.
Well, do you see right now in Nevada, specifically in Las Vegas, the Gaming Commission is the biggest barrier to entry and they're lobbying money.
Yeah.
If, say, the federal government either descheduled it or set up something where it was up to states' rights, do you maybe see an easing of the Gaming Commission and things like that?
Sure. I mean, that's the biggest hurdle for all of it is the federal situation, period. And it's our barrier to research. It's our barrier to everything.
Right.
To getting good research, to developing actually, you know, drugs and compound drugs that work with other, you know, the federal situation needs to change for us to truly, truly progress. But I don't think there's another example in American history where so many states are regulating something that is just not legal federally. I mean, it's never happened. It's an uprising.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing when you have way more conservative states taking this up, at least medically.
Yeah.
So it really is a matter of time. It's like the mushroom is too big now, which is great. But I mean, this has never happened before.
Well, do you think that CBD and the passage of maybe the farm bill helped normalize it for more maybe conservative states to allow the farmers to?
Yeah, I think so. I do. You know, CBD is. I mean, it's you gotta write a thank you letter to CBD because, like, that's why. You know, that's why your grandma, you know, is like, this is, I have cannabis on my, you know, I'm rubbing it right into my wrist, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, CBD has its own issues as far as, like, you know.
There's some snake oil going on.
Absolutely. But if that is what gets people comfortable with the overall concept of cannabis.
Well, sure, and it's also giving rise to research and development in other cannabinoids other than just THC.
Yes.
So now we've seen the emergence of THCV, we've seen the emergence of CBN and CBG. What do you think is the future of cannabis? Do you think THC and CBD are the end-all be-all? Do you think the alternative cannabinoid market is where things are kind of moving towards? What do you see?
I mean, I think that CBD and THC will always be like the mama and the papa, right? And you've got the mama. Those are going to be the six most famous letters, you know, in cannabis. And they will always be, I think, at the top of that food chain. But again, the thing that's exciting is there's so much more research to be done and so much more, benefits to be found, but research needs to happen.
What's next for you guys? You guys obviously have now separated from Lowell. You've established your own brand. You guys have now streamlined your operations and made it smoother. You guys are now having events on site. What's next?
I mean, we're really looking forward to our first 420 month. What?
The entire month.
All month is 420. we're really, really, really looking forward to that. We're doing some partnerships with Christopher Street West, which is the organization that puts on Gay Pride. Mm-hmm. We're really looking into digging into our community and starting to be able to roll out a lot of the community programming and fun programming and events programming now that we kind of have our legs on. So we're looking forward to digging in not only with our local community, but doing a really fun summer with tourists. It's going to be, you know, high tourist season here in Los Angeles, May, June, July, August. And we are really excited to be able to share this. You know, when you walk around and talk to tables here, we have so many locals, but we have so many tourists. We have people bring their luggage. We had to start like a little like luggage place on the back patio. I'm not joking. The first time I was like, why is there all this? And they're like, people come here. That's the first thing they do when they get off the plane. And sometimes the last thing they do before they get back on the plane. So it's, and that to me is part of that positive ubiquity. When we have people here from Iowa, when we have people here from, you know, Alabama, and they are saying like, this was amazing, we did this. That's what I want is for, I want us to just continue to do the good work and spread the good vibes and spread the good word. I mean, really just us existing, it still blows me away. I walk in here and the very thought of it, like the very thought that we get to do this and see how it affects people, you know? There was a HIV, long-term survivor of HIV, so that means HIV positive for over 15 years. He was HIV positive for like 30 years. U.S. veteran. Unbelievable guy, right? And, you know, talking about just his life, and he moved to California so that he could partake in medical cannabis. And he was so excited. He was like, you know what? I served my country in the closet. I don't want to take my medicine in the closet. Like, this stuff is really real. Like, we are very, very fortunate. And so, you know, what's next for us is to every day make this cafe as magical and wonderful and have guests have the best experience ever, but to continue to promote safe and legal access anywhere it's possible.
Awesome. Sarah Dale, co-founder and partner at OG Cannabis Cafe. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
You're welcome. This is really fun. My first podcast.
Again, thank you so much.
We would like to thank Sarah Dale and the OG Cannabis Cafe for their time and being in today's episode. OG Cannabis Cafe has since ceased their in-person consumption lounge under state social distancing orders due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and have opened a drive-through option, which you can find out more about by visiting them online at cannabis.cafe. Stay tuned to the next episode, here on Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast.